This episode is sponsored by Coconut. Coconut is for sexy time. It is lube, but guess what? It's organic. Coconut facilitates, affirms, and celebrates good, clean, healthy sex, all with the promise of naturally safe products developed by people who are obsessed with quality. They are dedicated to helping couples increase their capacity for connection, intimacy, and pleasure.
Coconut was founded to help couples lead healthier, happier lives by offering 100% safe and organic personal care products. I just got my Coconut oil-based lubricant in the mail, and I'm very excited. And I'm so great to have her. I'm so great.
I'm so great at sexy time, especially now that I have coconut-based oil lubricants for my sexy time. Everything will be slick, slap, and good old time wet.
Squash. And Coconut is free of alcohol, petroleum, parabens, glutens, phthalates, fragrances, and dyes. It's hypoallergenic, and it's 100% natural ingredients, meaning it's 100% edible. So,
that takes
your sexy time to the next level. Our listeners will get 15% off of their Coconut products. In our show notes, there will be a link, and use the code BABES15 at checkout. Have a great sexy time, babes.
We're your hosts, Dana and Kara,
and this is From the Mouths of Babes.
Welcome back, everybody. We are so excited for another chat, and we're excited for our guest today. Amanda Lauder is a certified sex and marriage coach who helps Christian men and women overcome their obstacles to create a more emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically intimate relationship. She is also the host of the Sex for Saints podcast that has over 1.4 million downloads. It's amazing. In addition to being a coach, Amanda is also a wife to Kevin and mom and stepmom to 5 kids, ranging in ages from 15 to 24. In her spare time, she enjoys reading, watching her kids play sports, fishing, and camping. So fun. We love it. Welcome. We're so excited for our conversation.
I'm so happy to be here with you guys. I think we're going to have fun.
Yeah. So we came across your account and immediately loved just your energy that you bring to talking about sexuality, relationships. But something that was really interesting is you talk a lot about modesty. And I think that is such an interesting topic and one that there's been a lot of discussion around recently. And I know that for Kara and I, that's something that, you know, we've had discussions about in general. We have a lot more sisters, and I know that that's, and, you know, nieces and nephews, that this topic is something that I think is worthwhile to just chat about. So we're excited to discuss modesty and what that is, what it's not, and just culturally what that looks like when we're having discussions with our spouses or with our kids.
Okay. I love it. I love the topic of modesty.
And why is that? Like, why is modesty something that you're so passionate about?
Because I think the culturally, the way that many of us were taught modesty and learned about modesty caused a whole lot of problems.
Yeah.
And a lot of the problems that I see in my coaching practice directly stem from people being taught about modesty and, you know, in conjunction with that, sexuality. And so I think the two are very tied together. And so I think the way things are shifting is better, but I think there's still a lot of people that were taught one way and are perpetuating that culture, even though things are shifting.
Yeah.
I think Dan and I have talked about this, that we moved from the Midwest to Arizona to a highly densely LDS population. And yeah. I just remember how I started feeling about my body and like feeling sexualized and ashamed. Yeah. changed dramatically from being just around a whole bunch of good little Christian kids in the Midwest,
right,
versus being around LDS people. And like, I immediately noticed, oh, everybody's wearing shorts over their swimsuits. I have to do that. You know, it was like little things that now I'm like, we looked stupid. All right. Like, number one, we looked stupid. Don't wear stupid Sophie shorts rolled up over your swimsuit. And, but yeah, my best friend was adopted from Russia when we were 16. And it's like the same thing. She's like, I used to love my body. I used to just feel strong and confident. And then once I was came into this culture, I just completely felt ashamed of like existing because we're told that we were responsible for everybody else's thoughts around us. And, you know,
I mean, that, I think that was one of the worst things that we were taught, is that we were responsible for how other people thought about us and how we dressed and our bodies and our sexuality. And that is so, so damaging. It is really, really damaging, as you said, from just your own shift in perspective on yourself and then your friends as well.
Yeah, I think we will talk more in depth about that. I think to start, let's get a foundation of like, what is modesty and what is it not? So I think when I was thinking about it, I think I've always thought about modesty as like, you know, keeping everything covered. And I think when I started actually studying about what modesty is and even looking at the definition of modesty, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I don't think I've ever thought about it that way. And I'll share some of those thoughts, but I'm curious from your perspective, Amanda, how would you define what modesty is versus what it's not?
I think modesty is about treating yourself and others with respect and graciousness. It's how you carry yourself, how you conduct yourself, your attitudes, your behaviors. It applies to everyone, not just girls. It applies to boys and girls and men and women. And it is really not about clothing choices, although that can play into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like what I started to grasp is that like modesty really encompasses like how we feel, how we think, how we behave. And like you said, it's not really about what we're wearing. But I think that it's true. Like, I think now as a parent, I'm trying to think like, okay, if I want my daughters to have a different outlook and to embrace and love their bodies, how do I talk about it with them? Because I think this idea of modesty, of respect for yourself, respect for others, is really important. So it's not like I don't want to teach modesty at all.
Right.
But I think there is a deeper meaning of modesty that we can teach to our children, and that includes boys and girls. So how have you been able to help people have conversations around modesty?
Well, I mean, just with my own kids, we talk a lot about respecting yourself and respecting your body and respecting those around you. That's, I mean, pretty much what the conversation entails when it comes to conversations about modesty. I don't really talk to my kids about what they're wearing. Unless it's like something that is like really inappropriate for the situation. So like, that's how we really address clothing in our family. Is it appropriate for the occasion? Are they comfortable? Are they, you know, going to be like, you know, pulling things down or like having to shift things all the time and to make it like, because that's distracting, not only for themselves, but for others when someone's constantly fidgeting because they're uncomfortable. So like, is it appropriate for the occasion? That's really how I talk about it with my own kids. I'm in young women's in my ward. And that's how I talk about it with my girls that I teach, is really just like, is it appropriate for the occasion? And are you comfortable in your choice? Are you comfortable in your body and in the clothing that you're choosing? But more, is it like, are you comfortable and making other people comfortable, trying to make other people comfortable with how you're acting and how you're presenting yourself? Are you being respectful?
I was just thinking like, at the gym, I'm always like, is this gonna, am I gonna get a nip slip in this outfit? Like, nobody wants that happening at the gym. Yeah. Nor do I. So that's, you know, yeah, more day-to-day stuff. I'm like, yep, that's okay. Is that working? Is the girls gonna stay in? Like,
yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, even when I'm talking to my young women, let's just use that for an example. So a couple years ago, we were going camping for Stake Young Women's Camp, and we were gonna be up in the mountains, and the Stake put out a dress code, and myself and the other leaders, I have great leaders that I work with. And we were like, we are not enforcing this. This is ridiculous. We don't agree with this at all. And so instead we talked about the girl to the girls. We're like, okay, we're going camping in the mountains where it's going to be colder and it's going to, there's bugs and, you know, weeds and stuff like that. So we recommend that you wear pants. Because if you're wearing shorts, you're much more likely to get bitten by bugs or scratched up or whatever. If you want to wear shorts, you go right ahead. It's just not what we recommend. And I don't really care how short your shorts are. Like, whatever you're comfortable with is fine with me. This is just what we're recommending. And that was a much better conversation than like, you can't wear short shorts. You can't wear leggings. You can't wear that. Like, you can wear whatever you want, whatever you're comfortable with. But let's just remember where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of the thing that is shifting is, okay, is it, I really like the way you phrased it of, is this appropriate for the situation that we're in? And getting our kids to critically think through that, right? Yes. Thinking about like, okay, if I'm doing a game night with my friends, or if I'm playing night games, like if I'm running around, am I going to be constantly annoyed that my shorts are up my butt crack, or, you know, just things like that, where you get them to think through those things so that they can make a choice that's theirs and that they're comfortable with and confident in, right? Because we don't want our kids going out and then coming home being embarrassed because, you know, their shirt kept coming down, you know, like it's not about having cleavage. It's just about you feeling comfortable and you feeling confident.
Yeah. A friend of mine, her oldest daughter came upstairs one morning dressed, and she was a little shocked at what her daughter was wearing. And her daughter was like super proud. She was like, "Is this so cute?" And her mom was just like, "Well, what do you think?" And she was like, "Well, I really like it, Mike." And she's like, "Okay, great. Are you comfortable?" Like, and she was like, "Yeah, it'll be great." She's like, "Okay." And so her daughter wore to school, and she got home that day. She's like, "Oh my gosh, I am never wearing this again. It was so uncomfortable all day." And like, what a great teaching moment for this, because mom didn't have to say, "That is not okay to wear. It's not appropriate. You shouldn't be wearing that. You're going to be so uncomfortable. Boys are going to see stuff," or whatever. Like, she was able to realize it for herself. And that is the best kind of lessons.
Well, and then you don't have like the butting heads with your mom of her telling you what to do and you being like, "Well, I'm going to wear whatever I want just because you say so, like you say not to out of spite." You know, it makes it so there's not as many power struggles, right, between and your kids.
And being a teenager is all about exercising your agency and becoming independent, right? Yes, separating yourself from your parents. And it usually starts with fashion and hair choices. Yes. And then it goes from there. I just think of like the teenage boys that are like, "Bruh, it's not even cold. I don't need to wear pants, more shorts year round. Bruh." Like,
if you want to wear shorts year round, you go right ahead.
Yeah.
You're just not allowed to complain that you're cold.
Yeah. Right. I feel like girls use the critical thinking skills a little bit better than boys sometimes. You're like, "Oh man, it's not
so much."
I am always surprised though when I go and drop off my daughter at preschool that I am always there at the same time when all of the like junior high kids are waiting for the bus. I'm like, it's raining, we live in the Pacific Northwest, and it's freezing, and you're wearing a tank top? What? Like, not because it's immodest, but just like the practicality of I'm like, first of all, they keep all of the school AC running way high, like this is just going to be freezing. But yeah, we just have to kind of let them figure it out.
Yeah, but it can be kind of shocking
sometimes
when our kids or see other kids like wearing clothes that we are so conditioned not to wear. right? Yeah. Like, I know I still struggle with that even as a mom. Like, even though I do this work so much, like my, you know, my daughters will come up in a crop top, you know, showing their stomach. And I'm, and like, I really, I'm like, okay, just manage yourself. Like, is this conditioning or do I truly have a problem with this? And why do I have a problem with it? That's kind of what I have to ask myself, because that conditioning runs so, so deep.
That is interesting. Is it conditioning or do I actually have a problem with it? Yeah. And I think it causes us to internalize those things a lot more.
For sure.
Mean, I struggle right now just with like when my daughter comes down and she's like, has mismatched clothes, mixing patterns. And I'm just like, this is like tendency to want to control everything. Right. But I'm like, okay, I just gotta let her do what she wants to do. Wear what she is comfortable, even though it might not look the best, but I'm like, okay, it's got to start now, even with 4-year-olds.
Yeah. But I think it's okay to have conversations too with your kids when things, maybe they don't understand the effect that they have on themselves and others around them. It's that respect issue. So just another example. So my youngest likes to push the envelope. Mm-hmm. She's 15 and she likes to color her hair in very outrageous colors, which I'm fine with. Her dad drives him crazy. It's like, it's hair. It's fine. But one day we live in Salt Lake and I was down in Provo watching my older daughter give a talk in sacrament meeting in her ward. And so I came back and just went straight to the church. And so I wasn't there when everybody was getting ready. And I walked in and my cute little daughter was wearing a very, very, very tight silk skirt that had a slit almost all the way up her thigh and a crop top that showed 4 inches of her stomach to a sacrament meeting. I was like, okay, all right, so how do we address this here? Didn't say anything at church, right? And I even said to my husband, I'm like, did you say anything? And he's like, I don't know what I could say. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'll dress up when we get home. So we get home and I was like, so tell me about your outfit today. And she was like, I just really love this skirt. I thought it was so pretty. And I was like, it is so pretty. It is a really pretty skirt. And if you were going out to a party or a club to dance, this would be an amazing outfit. But to sacrament meeting, it's probably not appropriate. Like, we don't need to be showing that much skin at sacrament meeting. Let's think about respecting not only yourself and your body, but everyone else around you too. Do you think maybe it made other people around you uncomfortable? And she was like, oh, maybe. And I'm like, it made me uncomfortable. And she was like, oh, okay. And I was like, so, you know, let's just maybe think through things here. She's like, I just really love this skirt. And I didn't have any other shirt that would go with it. I'm like, well, then let's go shopping because we'll find you another shirt. Like, even though the skirt's not my favorite, it would have been okay paired with something that wasn't a crop top. And so, kind of my philosophy, and I know this is kind of funny, a friend of mine told me this for her daughters, things can be one slutty but not too slutty. You can show legs or maybe a little bit of cleavage but not both, or like stomach but not legs too, like just something. So one slutty but not too slutty. And that's kind of the joke we have with my girls with like dresses that they're choosing for dances and stuff like that. Just one slutty, but not too slutty.
I love that. That's amazing.
Oh, balance.
Yes, absolutely. But still letting them express themselves in a way that's authentic to them.
Right. Yeah. So there's a bunch of things from that I want to talk about, because again, I think I'm answering my own question, but I'm like, is there a difference then in like, because I'm thinking, I think I listened to a conversation you had with another life coach about modesty and, you know, the changes in the first strength of youth and how they don't really talk a lot about clothing choices anymore, which I think is great. Yes. But I think he said something to the extent of like, or I can't remember the context of it, but essentially what it was that, you know, people would ask the question of like, if Jesus walked in the room, would he be okay with this? Like, would you feel comfortable in Jesus? And someone's response was like, well, yeah, because Jesus isn't a perv. you know, so
yeah.
But what I find funny about that is just thinking through, like, okay, is it about the fact that it's sacrament meeting and we should be more respectful, and we should be more, I don't know, more modest, right? Like more covered up because it's a church setting versus, you know, going to school. Like, what should we have more leniency depending on the circumstances? That's what
I think so.
Okay.
I think there's appropriateness. Right.
Yeah.
So even like, I'm okay with my girls wearing pants to church, mm-hmm. but when my daughter mm-hmm. came out with pants to go to the temple, I told her to go change because I think there's a level of appropriateness. And so it, you know, I mean, that's, I'm not saying everybody else has to do that, but that was a line for me that I didn't feel like was okay. And so, she was like, well, I don't see what the difference between the church and temple is. And I was like, well, I think there's a greater reverence at the temple. And so we should cover up a little bit more and we should wear clothing that's more appropriate for the temple, which showing respect to God as well as others. And she was like, okay, whatever. She wasn't too happy about it, but she did it anyway. And it was fine. But so I think it's just appropriateness. Like, yeah she must wear that outfit to go dancing, you know, or something. Go for it. But to church, not appropriate.
I really like the term, I've heard like predominantly Black people use the term like dressing up for Jesus. Like, well, on Sunday, I dress up for Jesus, you know, like my mind is toward Jesus and his mind is towards me. And we're here to praise, you know? And I just, I really like that it's like, this is the time where I can focus on my time with God and, you know, cause he's there. That's his time for me as well. And so I heard that like 10 years ago. I was like, that is such a good term. I'm going to use that.
I love it. But I think that is, I mean, something that was thrown around a lot, I guess when we were younger too, is like, what would Jesus say if he walked in? Like, I remember I was in high school and maybe I told the story in that podcast that you were talking about. I was in high school and I was in the choir. And I went to high school back east, so it wasn't Utah. And the show choir, we had dresses with spaghetti straps. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't allowed to wear spaghetti straps. But I wore it, and my parents walked in and about died. And when I got home, I got quite the lecture that night. And it was like, what would you do if the prophet walked in or if Jesus had walked in? I'm like, I was just wearing a dress, like shoulders, ooh, we're sexualizing my shoulders. My gosh. Right.
The uniform.
And like, it's so crazy. So to make it okay for my parents, I told my teacher I couldn't wear that anymore. And so there was another girl that was in the choir that was really busty, and she wasn't comfortable wearing them just because she felt like she was like falling out of it. Yeah. And so wanted a little bit more coverage. So they made us these like capes that would go over our shoulders. And in my opinion, that made me stand out even more.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden, I mean, if she wants to choose to wear that, that's for her own comfort. Totally fine with that. But like, I was doing it because my parents told me I had to, and it made me feel awkward and uncomfortable. And I didn't fit in with my peers. And there were other LDS girls that were, their parents were totally fine with them wearing the spaghetti straps. My parents were just really, really conservative that way. We had the rule, like once you turn 12, you had to wear clothes that would be appropriate with garments. So.
Okay. I want to talk about that. Because I heard that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I don't think our parents ever said that, but I probably in my mind thought that and chose clothes that would be garment friendly. So for those, I don't know if we've talked about garments before on here. So for those who have gone to the temple in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as part of like some of the covenants and promises that people make, they get undergarments that reflect their commitment to the promises that they're making to God and to Jesus. And so it's a white shirt, usually has a cap sleeve, and then they're like biker shorts, essentially, that go down to your knees. And so I think I probably always wore clothes that could be garment friendly. But when I thought about that, I was like, I think there's a part of like regret for me now as a parent and after having babies where I'm like, dang it, I miss my window of showing off my body. Because now I don't want to because I have stretch marks and loose skin, you know, and yeah. I'm like, oh, I really just missed like the prime opportunity to wear short shorts and bikinis, you know. But I just found that so interesting, and I wanted to talk about that and see what everyone's opinions were on that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to, but that was the rule in our house, which I will say it made it when I did go through the temple. It made it really easy for me.
Yeah.
There, I think I had like one pair of shorts that were just a little too short, one shirt that was a little too short, and one dress that the neck was a little too wide. Like everything was pretty modest, right?
Yeah.
So I really only had to get rid of 3 items of clothing when I went through the temple.
Which financially, you know, that might be a good perk.
Yeah. Like, I mean, poor, you know, 19-year-old getting married. I didn't have money to redo a wardrobe. And then like I have my daughter who's 21, went through the temple last year, and I have not had the same expectations of her and just let her kind of choose whatever she wanted. And she tends to be more modest just in general, but I mean, she definitely had clothes. So she had to do a lot of changing, and she's like, I really wish that I had realized how much this would affect me and financially, and would have made different choices had I realized. But I mean, that's great. And then she can tell that to her younger siblings, right?
Yeah.
Which, okay, so just so you know, and I think that's good coming from them rather than from mom, who's like, you need to do this and you need to do this, like just coming to that realization on her own.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I think the part where I'm like, is it reasonable to expect people who haven't made those covenants to
dress like they have?
To dress like they have. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, I just remember going to EFY. I only went one time and having my counselor, I had like a faux wrap shirt on and I had a lace cami, but it kind of had a little bit lower V in the back, but like mid back, like, and she's like, I don't know if the back of garments would cover, like that would cover a back of garments. I'm like, it's my neck. Like, and having to wear a t-shirt underneath it instead of just my lace cami that came in between my shoulder blades, you know.
Yeah.
And just feeling so uncomfortable, like so called out for something that was covered, you know. And like I was really busty when I was in high school too, and so I just remember people being like, your boobs are hanging out. I'm like, I'm wearing a normal t-shirt. Like, do I have to wear
a turtleneck?
Turtlenecks all the time? Like, well, the teacher was totally looking down your shirt. I'm like, that's his problem.
Yes.
Like, there's going to be a cleavage coming up to my neck because that's how high they come, you know? And it's so I just remember feeling so uncomfortable, like people calling me out. Like, there is literally nothing more that I can do other than wear turtlenecks and muumuus, y'all.
Hey, but you can wear turtlenecks and muumuus and people are still gonna know you have boobs.
That is true.
True.
Which they do. And I'm kind of built like a Kardashian, so I'm a statement piece no matter what I wear. And that's a thought I have every day of like, people are gonna notice me. Do I stand up and feel confident? Am I one slutty or two slutty? And
yeah,
everything I wear is pretty tight because that if I don't wear tight things, I look like a potato. Yeah. And so it is what it is. And I'm like, okay, that's their problem, not mine. Like, am I comfortable? Do I have to adjust my clothes a lot? Like, I won't be comfortable if I have to keep pulling my skirt down. But as long as it stays in place, I can be a comfortable statement piece.
Yes, you can.
It's an uncomfortable one.
Yes. I love that. Okay. This idea, though, that it's our responsibility of like other people's thoughts. So I think something that's really interesting is that it used to be that the conversations around modesty would be like exclusive to girls, right? And that we didn't talk about modesty with boys in the same way. I think those conversations should not be different. They should be the same. But I think somewhere along the lines, there was this unwritten rule that girls had more of a responsibility to be modest, and that part of that responsibility came with the responsibility to keep other people's thoughts clean. And I think that, as we've mentioned, created a lot of issues for people. And so what impact do we see of girls thinking that they have a responsibility to control men's thoughts?
Yeah. So girls learned that they had to be the gatekeeper to men's sexuality.
Yeah.
They learned that men are these sexual deviants that can't control themselves. They learn to be scared of men and men's sexuality. And men
and scared of their own. I think,
well, yes,
we're scared of our own sexuality.
For sure.
Well.
For sure. And then men learn to be scared of their own sexuality and what they do with their sexuality. And this perpetuates into marriage for sure. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Where women feel like they have to control the sexual relationship, or he's just going to go off the rails and they're both going to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Often men learn that they need to channel their sexuality away from the women that they love because they're afraid of being out of control, which then they often channel it into things like pornography, which causes problems. So, like, when we learn that we are responsible for how other people think and feel, it negates our own agency and it creates a lot of really big problems.
Well, I think it fuels really, yeah, like you said, bad behavior. Like, it fuels rape culture.
Yes.
Because if boys will be boys, girls were asking for it. Like, the TikTok is totally aflame with that. Pastor Bobby Leonard from like Alabama, I think, who said that if a girl is wearing shorts and she gets raped, she's asking for it. And if that man is on, if I'm on the jury for that man, he's getting off because that's she was insane. Asking for it because she wore shorts.
That is awful.
And so thank goodness normal people in the world, especially men, have stood up and said, like, every single person in that in that chapel should have stood up and said, no, you are wrong.
Yeah.
You do not ever say that rape is okay for any reason. But yeah, just that mentality of, like, boys will be boys. And I was just on a video today that a boy raped an unconscious girl. Oh. And he said he was guilty, and the judge reversed his decision because he didn't think the boy should go to prison for 4 years because that was the minimum punishment. And so he decided just to say, just kidding, I made a mistake, he's not guilty because he's just a young good boy. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I so just saying that we cannot control ourselves, and men cannot control themselves and their sexual desires, and that they are generally dangerous if left to their own devices. I'm like, that is so false. Mm-hmm. And a toxic rhetoric that is continuing because it just happened, you know.
Yep.
And it just does such an injustice to teach our young men that they are a problem. Mm-hmm. And so are girls for existing.
Yep. And I think so much of the modesty conversation actually creates the opposite of what they were hoping to do. It actually sexualizes girls more than desexualizes them, which we don't want to desexualize them either, but we don't need to overly sexualize them.
Right. Yeah. Their shoulders are too sexy. And yeah, that just existing that you're a problem. I just think that is such, like, that's, I just can think that that's how I felt often as a teenager, that my existence was a problem for all the men around me. And because I had a body, I had a woman's body as a teenager. And I just felt that was so unfair, you know? And just the opposite effect of, like, and then having to rebuild my confidence over the next 10 years of my life because of how people talked down to me for existing.
Mm-hmm. Dad, I'm sorry that was your experience. And I hope that because of conversations like this, we can be better and people will have better conversations, right, with their kids, which will perpetuate a different culture. When you were talking, Kara, I was just thinking about like more about the definition of modesty and how it's really like modesty is a lack of pretentiousness, right? We're not trying to impress people with, you know, our personality, with our bodies, right? It's just this regard for like decency, simplicity. We're showing reserve, right? And I think that's what is a beautiful thing that both men and women can have, is understanding their sexuality, but holding it in reserve. And it doesn't diminish it, right? It's just like you're preparing for the person that you can then share that with. I think that's the interesting thing, is that in an attempt to preserve relationships and marriages, we end up doing more damage. Because I do think that modesty and sexuality are intricately intertwined. I think modesty sets the boundaries for our sexuality, and not in the sense that it's like, it like blocks something, right? But it's the healthy practice of sexuality, which is that we can be private, we can develop in our relationships. And it's not because we're prude or we're insecure, but we're private because we share only specific things with our spouses. And the more that we honor like those boundaries around our, you know, current or future relationships, the more our relationships stay exclusive, right? And I think that's really important with building trust. And that's the essence of sexual modesty, right? Is that we're not pretentious in our sexuality, but that we're keeping it in reserve so that it's a beautiful, vulnerable, open, good thing within our relationships.
Love that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I love that. That was really good.
I think something else that, well, is there anything else that we want to talk about as it relates to modesty and sexuality?
I think we've covered.
I just think that it creates that safety within your marriage, of that kind of like what you're saying. It's that this is ours together, in that wholeness and unity with each other, that you know the other person is respecting your relationship and that really special part just between the two of you. And that, you know, you're not sharing all that with all your friends in the ward.
Yeah.
I think kind of going along with that, on the almost the opposite side, because of what we've been taught about modesty, there's a lot of women who are ashamed or afraid to even show their spouse their more sexual side.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's a problem, like when you're out on date night as a part of foreplay, to maybe dress a little bit sexier. Like, you're not out there showing it. You're not out there dressing that for everyone. You're dressing it like for your spouse, right? Or, you know, when I go on vacations with my spouse, most of the time I'm in a two-piece. Like, I'm probably not going to be doing that around my kids because it's a different environment, right? But around my spouse, totally fine. And there's a lot of women, and I'm not saying you have to or you should, but there's a lot of women who are afraid of doing that. And they're like, no, I have to be modest at all times and in all ways and in all things, instead, even with my spouse. And I mean, women who won't wear lingerie because they're afraid of not being modest with their spouse. And so I think that's another way that they're interconnected, and it carries over into marriage.
Yeah. And it's the one place where you don't have to be, right? That you can be fully seen.
Yes.
And you can also see and accept and love your spouse fully as well, in your rawest state, and not being able to, because of like your programming, to be able to be fully vulnerable with the one person you're allowed to be, it's such a disservice. There's so much you can be missing out on. So I know several people that have had to do therapy regarding like good girl syndrome and deprogramming that, you know, after they got married, and they'd had no idea that that was going to be an issue for them. They were excited about the intimacy. And then as soon as they got to it, it was like, oh, this is really scary.
Yeah. I mean, that's my clientele.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of clientele is women. I mean, it's the deprogramming, the deconditioning that so many of us have to go through.
We have several single men who did the same thing. Like, I made a joke about boobs and how great boobs are. Everybody loves boobs. And they were like, so uncomfortable. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Now I know what makes you uncomfortable. I'm going to make jokes about boobs all the time.
Yeah.
Not very modest of me, but I'm enjoying making you uncomfortable. I'm going to deprogram you, sir. But it's interesting, that boys even suffer from good boy syndrome as well. And because they've been fear-mongered, I guess, into thinking that it's dangerous, or they could be dangerous, or, you know, and it's just so sad when that takes so much time to deprogram and to really get into. And every single marriage is a progress of experimentation and letting your walls down with intimacy. But when it takes 10 years of a marriage
or longer
to barely break the surface, like, that's so unfortunate. And like, don't be afraid to ask for help, because there are practitioners that is.
I have clients in their 70s.
Mm.
Like, it's like, it doesn't go away. So, but I want you to think about, we've talked about like how sexuality is dangerous, right? Like, we get this idea that sexuality is dangerous.
Yeah.
Think about what happens to our nervous system when we're in danger.
Yeah. Your fight or flight.
So anytime sex comes into play and you have this programming that sex is dangerous, your nervous system goes into overdrive, right? And you're in fight or flight. You're having anxiety, which turns off, like, cortisol goes up, and your which turns off your sex, your libido.
Yeah.
And so all of these women, and some men too, that like, I just don't have no desire for sex. Like, because you've learned your entire life that sex is dangerous.
Yeah.
So like, it makes total sense.
Yeah. That's such an unfortunate thing, but I'm so glad that there are so many more resources. So say you don't want to go to a coach or a therapist about it, there's lots of really good books
there's podcasts, there's courses. You can learn, like, the women that join my membership, they never have to be coached, and they never have to be coached in front of another person if they don't want to be.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's people in my membership I've never seen, but they're learning a ton.
That's great for them. I know. We'll be sure to link all of that in our show notes. So if you are listening to this and you're like, oh man, I totally resonate with this, this is exactly how I feel, then there are resources, and we'll make sure we link that. I think what's interesting is that I think this conversation has been really productive and great. And I think we are making a lot of strides towards talking about modesty. But I do think there's room for improvement. And I even saw this as I was preparing for this conversation of scrolling through different websites where, you know, there's a bunch of articles that talk about, like, how can we talk about modesty in a new way, and embracing, you know, this idea that it is a problem, we do need to address it. And then, you know, I would keep scrolling through articles, and it would be like, the best 15 modest swimsuits for the summer season, or modest prom dresses for this year, or, you know, modest dresses that were worn at the Golden Globes. And I think it's, even when we start to change the way we talk about modesty, we still have this underlying message of, if you do not dress exactly like this, then you are therefore not modest. And I think because of that, there's a lot that we need to change culturally on how we address people, how we become less judgmental. I know, as we're trying to deprogram ourselves, we also have to deprogram then how we view other people. And so do you have any suggestions, Amanda, on how do we practice being less judgmental about how others dress, you know, whether or not they're wearing garments or, you know, how do we rewire negativity about our bodies or other people's bodies in general?
Yeah. So it's really natural to judge.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I'm going to be able to tell you like how to stop judging people because it's just part of who we are. I mean, it's that critical thinking. What we have to realize is there's a point where it breaks down.
Yeah.
And breaks down the relationship versus like judging to keep us safe, which is what your brain is actually doing. Right. So the brain is saying like, okay, if like this person is immodest, are they safe for me to be around, to be associated with? That's what your brain is doing. Cause everything is about safety and making sure we're okay. And we're fitting in with the tribe so that we don't get ostracized. So that's
Is interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Huh. So it's very natural to judge, but not just knowing that it's not helpful. So noticing, oh, wait, here I am judging. Okay. I'm just going to notice that in myself. Don't need to shame myself for it. But what do I want to be thinking on purpose instead? Do I want to be judging here? Is this a situation where I actually do want to be judging? Like, is my safety or is this relationship in jeopardy? Right. Like,
we need
to ask, like, is it good judgment to be judging here or not? And if it's not, then okay, we can just let that thought go and redirect towards something that we want instead.
I love that.
That just takes practice.
Yeah. I think that's good. Cause I think everybody like gets kind of intrusive thoughts of sorts, you know, and like when we talk about sexuality, like especially when you talk about like pornography and compulsive use of things, so like okay, like I can acknowledge the thought of like, oh, there is this person, this is attractive person, or we, you know, that's just a good example, like I can acknowledge it, okay, let it go and move on. Same with like, oh, her shorts are very short.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm noticing I'm judging here. Is this helpful in this situation? Nope, not really helpful. Okay, move on.
Is it my business what underwear she's wearing? No, it's not my business. I'm a business. I don't want people wondering about my underwear. So.
Right, but you don't have to like shame yourself in the process. Like just notice like, it's really normal that my brain wants to do this. Not a problem. And move on.
Move on. I think there's a lot of, one thing I love to quote our niece one time, her sister was like, your hair looks so stupid in the back. Like she's trying to fix it. She goes, Ivy, the back of my head is none of my business. If the back of my own head is none of my business, because I can't even see it. What else is not my business? So many things are not my business. Let it go. Move on.
Love that. And then I think like when it comes to rewiring how we think about our bodies, that just takes practice. And again, noticing how we're talking to ourselves, how we're thinking, how we're judging ourselves. Like if we could just start to notice, because we have relationships with, you know, our sexuality, we have relationships with our body, we have relationships with other people. And so again, our brain thinks the safer thing to do to make sure that we fit in and that we're not going to get ostracized is to judge ourselves. Super fun. And so like noticing how we talk to ourselves is a really, really important piece. And do you allow yourself to talk to yourself the way you would allow someone to talk to someone you love? I mean, a lot of us say some really crappy things to ourselves that we would never allow someone else to say, right?
Yeah.
So just noticing, oh, wait, here I go again, doing that and practice doing something nicer. So I have had a very fraught relationship with my body. So I was married for 13 years to my first husband, and it was very emotionally abusive. Mm-hmm. And most of our marriage revolved around my weight, my size, how much I ate, how much I exercised. And he was not very kind. I'll just say that. And so my weight was constantly going up and down. And I mean, his criticisms were always in my ear and on top of my own criticisms. Right.
Right.
And so it has been a process of rewiring how I think about myself. a few years ago, we went camping as like my entire family, extended family. And my mom decided that was a great time to do family pictures. Not sure why we're camping. And so I have the nicest camera and I have a tripod and stuff. And she's like, okay, you just set this shot up and put everybody in their place. And then you can, you know, hit the timer and run and jump in. So I do that and I run and jump in and I do that a few times and I look at the pictures and I'm on the end and you can just see how big my butt is sticking out and all this stuff. Like my brain just starts going, right? So then I like restructure things so that I can like hop around behind somebody so you don't see things, right? But then like when I get them home and I'm like editing them, I'm going through these pictures again and my brain just starts going down a rabbit hole of all the horrible things. And I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. We do not talk to ourselves this way anymore.
Yeah.
We treat ourselves nicely. So let's find some good things to say, even if it's like, your hair looks really nice in this picture, right? Like just find some good things because there's always going to be parts of ourselves that we don't really love, right? And that's okay. But can we get to a place of acceptance and can we focus on the things that we do like?
I love that. I think one of the biggest takeaways that I've had, and this has been like a 7-8 year journey for me, is really understanding what virtue is. And we had Tammy Hill, who is another like relationship and sex therapist, and we talked about this very idea of, you know, virtue garnishing our thoughts and how, you know, we have the tendency to think that virtue is just about sexuality, but really what I've come to learn is that virtue is about the positivity and the way that we think about ourselves. And, you know, when we think about virtue, are we speaking kindly to ourselves? And I think when we do that, when we are kind to ourselves, when we are disciplined in the way that we speak, we can have clarity, right? Which I think clarity helps a lot of us to feel impressions from the spirit. And then, you know, as that scripture talks about, we can confidently stand before God. And I think it's not because we are pure and clean, right? And that we are better than, but just that we are confident in our decisions, in our thoughts, and there's clarity. And so I hope that the people who are listening to this can let virtue garnish their thoughts and that they can start the process of speaking kindly to themselves, changing, you know, the programming that you may have experienced as an adolescent so that you can show up more confidently in your relationships, in your marriages, but for yourself too, right? Confidently show up for you because we all deserve to feel confident, to be happy, and to embrace every aspect of who we are, right? And intricately intertwined in that is our sexuality. And I just think it's such a bummer that we haven't quite mastered how to accept that. And I hope that by having conversations like this, slowly over time, women will regain their confidence and accept their divinity, right? Because part of that is their sexuality.
For sure. Thank you.
Well, go ahead.
I was just thinking, like, the thought that came to my head the whole time you were talking is just ending the comparison that we have, that men and women both do it constantly.
Yeah.
Just how we're wired to compare, to assess a situation and compare ourselves and to compete. And that really, for men and women, can really hurt their relationships, their friendships, everything. If everything feels like a competition in every aspect of your life, physically, you know, and mentally, if you're comparing, if you're smarter than everybody else in the room, you know, that it is such, yeah, it does you such a disservice into having true connection with other people. And I think that's a big part of what this life is about, is to develop connection and relationships with people that in turn help us become more of the people we're ultimately supposed to be.
what Amanda said is the piece that is like, am I frozen again?
Yeah, it's okay, but we can still hear you.
Okay. This idea of like, we judge or we compete because we feel like we're like unsafe, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when we can step back and figure out like, am I safe? Okay, I'm safe. I don't have to compete. I don't have to compete for someone's affection. I don't have to compete for someone's
approval.
Right. Yeah. Then I think that makes all the difference. So that is something I'm going to start practicing just in my own thought, in my own thoughts. Wow. This was such a great conversation. Thank you, Amanda. And I am so glad that we were able to discuss this.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Let's end by sharing funny stories that came from the mouths of our babes. Kara, do you have one?
I don't think I've shared this one yet. My son said, we have a friend, and he, so Parker said to our friend, he said he was going to, what did he say? He said he was going, no, not to go to his class. Oh, or our friend, adult friend was like, I'm going to show up to your classroom. And Parker says, well, they'll recognize you because you're tall and sassy. He is very tall and very sassy, man. So he is true. But it's just funny how our children pick up on other people's personality traits.
It's not a bad thing to be noticed for being tall and sassy.
Yeah, I love that.
Amanda, do you have a funny story that came from a babe in your life?
Yeah, so my kids are not little anymore, but really funny one that I remember from my nephew recently. So I don't even know how old he is. He was a few years old, but my sister, it's really important to her that, you know, she teaches her kids like anatomically correct terms for the genitalia. So, he kept calling his penis peanuts and I kept correcting him. No, it's a penis, not peanut. So then one day he was like, can I have a penis butter sandwich?
I love that.
So now in our family, it's always known as a penis butter sandwich.
Solid. Appropriate. Yep.
Yeah.
I love how kids' brains work because like we're saying the same thing. You're like,
same thing.
Peanut butter, penis, it's all the same. So yeah, that is so great. I really enjoy that. But I love when things that kids say continue to be the family joke for the next 25 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love it. So good.
Okay, my husband Luke is wearing a cut off like sleeve shirt because he had just been at the gym and had run earlier in the evening, and we were sitting at dinner and my 4.5-year-old Sawyer, she kept saying that she could see Luke's nipples, and she kept pulling her dress down so that she could look at hers. And you know, we're like trying to have a conversation about like, yeah, you know, like boys show their nipples because they don't have boobs, and girls, we try to keep them, you know, private and covered, you know. And she turns to me and she says, I get to choose what I want to do with my nipples. Like, well, yes you do. But I'm like, I don't want to squash like her confidence or like anything, but it's like, yes, that's true, but like
you're going to get to an age where the fear of getting arrested for showing your nipples will be out there.
Yeah.
Or she'll grow to a point where privacy becomes more important, hopefully.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, is she's like all over privacy when she's like in the bathroom, never wants anyone in the bathroom with her. Like if her sister even is near the door, she is like having a conniption, you know? So it's just funny the things that she's like private about and things that she's not. So.
Well, it's not really about privacy. It's that you're not going to tell me what to do.
Totally.
Yeah. I get to decide. I have full autonomy, even as a toddler. Do not tell me what to do.
Just so true. Awesome.
Yeah. I know. Bless her and bless me when we get to the teens. Saying,
speaking of sassy.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Great. Well, thanks everyone for joining us. We love this conversation. If you enjoyed it, be sure to share it, like it, and subscribe. As we mentioned before, we'll link where you can connect with Amanda and if you're interested in her membership, we'll link all of that in the show notes. But